This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Philip C. and this is the Breakfast Grill. On the grill today is Anthony Shayanta Abercorn, CEO of Boost, as we discuss the performance of their e-wallet business and their foray into digital banking. Welcome to the Breakfast Grill, Shayanta.
Thank you, Philip, and good to be with you here today.
Now, let's just deep dive into the most commonly known product in Malaysia, which is your e-wallet. And if you look at your quarter two numbers, you know, gross transaction values up 15%, users up 20%. So when I kind of unitize the numbers, you see the decline in your GTV per user, you know. So what is driving that decline in your gross transaction value per user in quarter two?
I think overall, if you take, just to take a step back, if you take our e-wallet business over the last couple of years, we've seen tremendous growth and it's got mainstream adoption. Coming into the pandemic, I think we did a structural shift. We were primarily an offline wallet. We pioneered scan and pay QR codes in this country, which is something that we're very proud about. And we, if you like, set the roadmap for others to follow when it came to that. Over time, especially when we got into COVID, the COVID period, probably 2020, early 2020, about 70% of our transactions were still coming from offline QR payments. Now, we did a structural shift over that period where about 60% of our business now comes from online-related use cases.
The shift from scan to pay, right?
Yeah, so we did a structural shift. The numbers itself, the usage numbers haven't come down. The GTV per user hasn't come down overall if you take a trend. But what we've done is we've done a structural shift in the business, which was kind of the need of the hour going with what was happening in the marketplace and the opportunities that were there in the market. And that is something that I think bodes very well for us now going forward, because if you look at the rates of online adoption, it has increased significantly across a whole area of use cases across Malaysia. Something that I think we're well positioned to take advantage of as a very large payment service provider.
Large for sure, because I think you account for about 9 million plus Boosties and you have about 250,000 SMEs in your Boost family, right? Large. And I must look at your numbers again. You did quite well. The losses really did narrow quite a bit. And that was a function of really putting a lot of pressure on your cost side. So there was a lot of marketing expenditure cost applied in terms of your discipline there. But so how long can you maintain your retention of your customers? How long can you maintain or grow your gross transaction values when you are under pressure to cut your marketing expenditure?
Yeah, so Philip, we don't quite look at it in those dimensions, right? So when we think about a customer, we think about, you know, the lifetime value of a customer that and compare that to kind of the cost of acquiring the customer and retaining the customer. And at a unit level, at a customer level, we want to always remain positive. So as we grow, we want the unit economics of our business to always remain positive. And being in digital for a while, and Axiata has had a number of digital businesses, I think, over the years, spanning almost a decade now, that's one of our key learnings. So as we grow our business, we want to make sure that the unit economics is positive. So at a unit level, we remain positive. And that's something that we've been able to do at Boost, right? So we have... In the early years, obviously, as you alluded to, there was a lot of investment in marketing. We built out a very large customer base. We built out a very large merchant ecosystem. And that's something that we are quite proud about. I think as we move forward, it's about adding a whole host of other services to the customers that we have acquired. So we have, aside from payment services, we have a whole bunch of other services, including lending and so forth. And we can talk about that later. Right. But it's really about going beyond what we built as a payment service provider, which we think was just, you know, the tip of the iceberg in terms of being able to serve customers and add a lot of more other services. And that's a little bit what we've done in this last year. Right. And I think from the ability to retain customers, to get keep customers more loyal, because I think that's really our focus going forward. To move just beyond being a pure payment service provider. And I think that's on that front, we've made a lot of traction over the last 18 months.
Yeah, you measure customer by this term, net economics. And I think what you are implying here is that payments is really just a subset of that definition of net economics, which then leads to the question in my mind is that at what point will the net economics work for the e-wallet business to be profitable? Or if I'm hearing you right, is the e-wallet an entry point for the portfolio to be profitable? So we are willing to make e-wallet the loss leader to help drive the other services.
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at the typical playbook in fintech, right? So I mean, I think this is something that happens in other countries as well. Nobody really makes money on payments alone, right? So payments, if you like, is the initial catchment or hope to build, like I said, a large catchment of customers and merchants, right? But it's really about being able then to add other services, including lending services, insurance services, you know, getting people to do a wider set of use cases on your app, including paying their bills and so forth, right? So I think if you look at it from a customer level, and if you look at the number of services that we customers are adopting at an overall level, yes, we will certainly be profitable, and we have a path to profitability. I think that's
when is that path actually?
I think from on a run rate basis, we will probably be profitable next year. We operate, like I said, in Boost, probably about five different businesses. I think three out of the five businesses are already profitable on a run rate basis. So I think there's a clear path there. So a path to profitability is something that we see a clear pathway towards. But at the same time, we are continuing to build scale. We are continuing to deepen our customer relationships. We are continuing to invest in other areas as well. And if you look at the portfolio of services, and if you look at some of the businesses that we've launched recently, I think that's, we can talk a little bit more about that. That's also a big, big focal point for us.
Yeah, let's talk about this restructuring that took place, because you have restructured Boost. You said five, but what we see is the four core consumer-related lines. There's Boost Life, the e-wallet business. You have Boost Biz, the merchant solution app. Then Boost Credit, which was formerly Aspirasi, your credit lending business. And then Boost Connect, right? Formerly API Gate, the payment solutions business. So you're telling me that when you aggregate all these four business lines together, they, in the sum of its parts, deliver synergies and really helps you deliver return on investment for your shareholder?
Correct. So I think just to run you through that journey, I think we had set up a number of, we got into the fintech space probably 4 years ago, and we had set up a number of independent businesses. Boost was originally the brand just associated with our e-wallet business. We had a brand called Aspirasi, which was again a trailblazer in, you know, doing micro lending on a digital platform based on AI. We had a cross-border API-based platform business called Appigate, right? So all of these different businesses serve different segments of the market, and they were all playing the fintech domain. So what we did this year is we kind of brought it all under one umbrella, all under the Boost brand. And the rebranding you mentioned is kind of how we have rebranded a lot of these companies. And the reason we did that is because we realized, especially in individual markets, we were servicing the same customer through our different services. So, for example, if you had a small business that was on our Boost payment platform, the same business was taking loans by Aspirasi, right? So it made a lot of sense for us to aggregate that goodwill and the customer affinity that we were capturing in different parts of the business, and also to synergize and connect the dots across our different businesses, right?
When you look at the services on an isolated basis then, which ones deliver the best margins for you?
Well, without getting into too much detail, what I can tell you is the lending business is a business that's quite, from a unit economics perspective or a contribution perspective, it's one of the more profitable businesses we have. The cross-border payment business, because we deal with enterprise customers, is very profitable as well. The merchant business, merchant solutioning business, again, is something where we are just not providing merchants payment services. We are providing them a whole host of other services. And especially in this time, we are helping a lot of them get onto digital platforms as well. So all of that are areas where there's significant value that we're providing to our customers, and we are capturing part of that value.
I mean, this vision of the Boost portfolio that you have outlined just now, I think has captivated, I think, many investors. And one in likely scenario was Great Eastern. I think there has been a JV between Axiata Digital and Great Eastern, right, with Axiata investing 22% for $70 million, I think giving Boost a valuation of about $1.3 billion. What synergies do you expect to get from Great Eastern?
Yeah, so Great Eastern was a company that we actually had a commercial relationship, a business partnership relationship before. Yeah, they were one of the principal underwriters. Mm-hmm. So we had an insured tech agreement, if you like, with them before they became an investor. And they were our principal underwriter as part of that arrangement. So becoming a shareholder was a natural extension of that relationship. And it was also a vote of confidence in a large financial institution like Great Eastern, because they saw value in us as a partner, not just in terms of being able to build an insurtech business with them, but also to build a whole suite of financial services products. And that's something that they were interested in as well. And so that was really the rationale for Great Eastern to invest and partner us. And we were very excited that they came on board. And it was a strong external validation of our business. It was also the largest ever investment in a fintech company in Malaysia at that time. Back in mid-2020. Mm. So it's again something that we were very proud of in terms of being able to again set the bar for other fintechs here as well in Malaysia.
On the Breakfast Grill, we have on the line Shayantha Abekon, CEO of Boost. Up next, their digital banking license application, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. On the Breakfast Grill, we have with us Anthony Shayantha Abekon, CEO of Boost, as we talk about their e-wallet business and how it held up during the pandemic. Now, Shayantha, I want to talk to you about your digital banking license. There are 29 applications for 5 licenses, 1 in 6 chance. How do you rate your chances?
So I think the digital bank, our journey towards applying for the digital bank is something that started almost 2 or 3 years ago. And obviously the digital bank licensing framework was not there at that time, but we always had the ambition to build more and get deeper into financial services, even when we started off our journey. So when we started off as a payment service provider, in our initial roadmap, we had services like get into lending, insurance, savings, remittance, and so forth, right? So the ambition to build a much wider full spectrum player was always there. The digital banking application was a natural extension of that thinking. When the licensing framework came out, and I think Bank Negara came out with an exposure draft first, and they consulted a lot of industry players who were already in the fintech space, including us. We felt it was quite a progressive construct for any applicant to come in, especially a fintech, to come in and apply for a digital banking licensing framework. So number one, we felt the framework was very enabling, and that was one of the draws for us to apply. The second was the realization probably that while we are a fintech, we probably there's some journey to becoming a bank. So we needed to think of a consortium partner as well, rather than just applying on our own and then think about who would be kind of the best partner to work alongside with us. And then thereby, you know, we came up eventually through a process with RHB as a partner. And I think the thinking about us of getting the banking license is really about us capturing again, the full value and being able to service the customers that we have on our platform today across a whole range of services, not just limited to, let's say, the services we have, but what services we can offer as a bank. So it's, you know, really to offer a full spectrum of services. And I think the digital banking license would enable us to do that.
Why RHB? You were alluding to the process of selecting a partner. Why did you select RHB?
So fundamentally, I think we were looking to, so if you think about us as a fintech player, I think we had a lot of things that we had expertise in, which was technology, the ability to understand customers digitally, expertise in how to run a fintech, how to scale technology platforms in AI, machine learning, so forth. But we were the first to, we'll be the first to admit we wouldn't know everything about running a bank. So fundamentally, we wanted to work with somebody who understood the banking space, right? And I think then it was really about the meeting of minds, people who had the same philosophy as right. us and who had a philosophy that was in sync with what we wanted to do as we graduated some of our businesses into digital banking. And I think the conversation with RHB is actually a conversation that started long before the application. We were in discussions for quite a while, almost 2 years. And I think we were able to have alignment on a lot of the key principles. And that really, in a nutshell, is why, which is very important in any consortium. I think it was purely because we were aligned on all the key principles of how we would run and operate a digital bank. That that's really why we came together.
Well, this is a very interesting point because there was a collaboration with RHB Islamic even before this discussion. And as you rightly said, there was a 2-year process to align philosophies. Is part of the philosophy about clear demarcation about what you will do as a digital bank versus what RHB's current conventional banking business is?
Yeah, so I think the digital banking licensing framework also, if you like, sets some parameters there, right? So I think one of the things Bank Negara looks for is any applicant that is successful would have to demonstrate how they are able to use technology to serve underserved sectors of the economy. So by definition, what banks are not servicing today. And I think this is one of the main thrusts for this piece of regulation to come forth. So by definition, I think that's it. A very clear baseline. If you look at our businesses, we've been primarily focused on serving small micro SMEs, providing them loans. Typically businesses that aren't able to get loans from traditional FIs. And we're able to service them because both using our technology platforms, we're able to reach them in a far more cost-efficient manner as opposed to physical branches. We are also able to use the transaction and other data that we have to use our machine learning algorithms to score them. So again, we don't need the traditional thick file client. So by definition, we were able to build a business today in our Boost Credit business that is currently not in competition with the banks and really underserved. And it's really an extension of this business that we want to take into the digital bank. So by definition, there was really no overlap from that perspective, right? And it was very easy to partner with somebody operating the traditional FI space because that's not a space that we are operating in, and we don't foresee that to be a space where the digital bank will operate in. And it's also within the framework of what Bank Negara has come up with.
Well, as you rightly mentioned, the digital banking license and mandate is really to target these unserved and underserved segments. And I think Bain came out with a study to say that nearly 55% of the Malaysian adult population is underbanked or unbanked. So the numbers are there. But my question is, does it deliver return on investment to the shareholder? You were alluding that it does deliver a lower cost of operations, but can you deliver the margins that your shareholders will want to see?
Yeah, so I think if you take our experience that we've had, and we've been lending to the underserved and unserved sector for almost 2.5 years, right? I think we've been able to disperse almost 400 million worth of loans to that sector. And a large part of that has come actually in the last 18 months because early years we were experimenting and, operating on a smaller scale. So in terms of scale, I believe the scale is there. And if you look at the economics of the business, I mean, the NPL, everyone is worried about, the NPL experience in this sector because there is a dearth of data. I mean, I can share that our NPLs have been, even in the COVID cycle, they notched up a bit, but they've been under 3% over the last 3 years. So we've been able to build a business that we believe can scale a lot more. And the unit economics of that business is quite very, very good. So the short answer is yes, I think it can deliver shareholder returns. And in our case, it's not just theoretical. We've actually been doing this business for a while. So we have a fair understanding of what the market is and how we could service it and what potential returns there are to any investor.
So let's just run a hypothetical scenario where you are successful in securing the license. Would you then collapse all the businesses under Boost under this JV then? Because as you say, the key is the synergies between all the different business lines, no?
Yeah, so the thinking, the current thinking is our Boost, and obviously this is subject to our application with Bank Negara and so forth, but our current thinking is we have a lending business, a very sizable lending business, formerly Aspirasi, now Boost Credit, which was a trendsetter in this market. That business, a large part of that business would fold into the digital bank, right? And so from a business continuity perspective, a lot of customers who we are servicing today would then continue to be serviced by the digital bank quite seamlessly. I think that's the thinking right now. The other components of our business would probably stay out from a legal perspective, right? They would be in separate companies, but the synergies that we have today would very much continue to be in place. So even if you think about how we are structured today, some of our businesses are in separate legal entities, but in terms of our approach of servicing the customer, it's a single interface in many cases. That would continue. And if you think about the success that we've had in lending, it's really because we have taken the word gets used overused a lot, but we have taken an ecosystem-driven approach to lending, right? So we onboard partners with their ecosystems onto our platforms, and we are able to provide credit into credit and other services into those ecosystems. So to give you an example, right, if you take a distributor and a small retailer, we provide supply chain financing in that cycle by onboarding both the distributor and a retailer onto our lending platform, as an example, right? So it is seamless. It is integrated into a typical retailer goes about, or a borrower would go about their day-to-day work. So let's say if a retailer wants to place an order with a distributor, they could order for cash or they could order by credit on their system. And that credit would be provided instantly integrated with our lending platform by Boost Credit today and potentially the digital bank in the future. So that's kind of the modus operandi we've had. And it has worked very well because it creates a lot of stickiness. It creates a cohesive, if you like, ecosystem. And it allows us to scale the model as well.
What happens if you don't succeed in securing the license?
Well, I mean, we would continue to do what we're doing today, right? So we would, I mean, our ambition is to take what we've done in Boost and also build a platform that is regional, right? And take the Boost brand also to other markets that have similar problems that can be solved, right? So if you think about what we want to do in the credit space, we would continue to scale the way we are scaling today, which is providing financing to small businesses. Now, the digital banking license providers provides a separate framework for doing that, but we can continue to do what we're doing today under the licenses that we operate under today. So I think the short answer is we would continue as we are. We would not, it would not affect our growth ambitions. I don't think it would even affect our growth trajectory, right? But I think obviously getting the license is something we would like to do, because I think it provides us a pathway to work under a regulatory environment, which I think is also the way that fintech should operate in the future.
Perhaps the growth isn't then in Malaysia, but beyond Malaysia, because you are part of the bigger holding company, Axiata, which has operations across Asia in multiple markets, actually fast-growing markets. What is the Boost expansion plan beyond Malaysia then?
Yeah, so currently we operate in Indonesia as well, and Indonesia is actually growing even faster than Malaysia. In Indonesia, we operate a slightly different model. We operate a B2B, a model focused on small merchants, and we focus on providing them financing. So it's a more focused model, but in terms of the scale of the model and the growth we've seen, it's been almost doubling every 6 months. So it's been phenomenal growth over the last 2 years that we've seen. So we are present in these two markets. Through our cross-border payment platform, Boost Connect, we also service five other markets, which overlaps with the Asiata footprint, which is, Bangladesh, Cambodia, Sri Lanka, and so forth. But we are not present in those markets.
Would you?
To answer your question about regional expansion, I think that's our thinking is twofold. One is we obviously want to deepen our presence in the markets we are in, right? So in Malaysia, we are looking at obviously applying for a digital bank license. In Indonesia, it's a fast-growing market. We are looking at options of how we grow there as well through partnerships and other models. So that's one focus. But we will also look at other markets where there are similar, if you like, market structures and opportunities where we feel we have the right to play and the right to win. And obviously in some markets, because Axiata is present, we have some assets on the ground. If the market structure is similar to what we have in the markets we operate in, there would be a case for us to enter those markets, right? So we are looking at these opportunities all the time. Right now, I have nothing to announce, but I think it's something that is it's always on our minds, and it's always something that is part of our internal discussions.
On the Breakfast Grill, Anthony Shyantha Abakon, CEO of Boost. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.